What is community security and what does it entail in Nepal?
So community security is an approach that addresses insecurity, integrating human security, development and state building and peace building. So it's work by bringing together people, different groups within the community, state authorities and security providers to jointly discuss their safety and security priorities and identify ways to address them in a joined and constructive way. And by doing that, it establishes relationship, it bridges gaps that might exist between those different groups, and it builds the capacity of those different groups to discuss and address their issues. And then by doing that also provides an opportunity, because there's more trust and better relationships established, for further reaching reforms, for increasing resilience, social coherence and social harmony within the communities and between communities and state authorities. And in Nepal, what we do, for example, we bring together people from different groups, or different caste groups, different ethnic groups, different religious groups, obviously like men, women, sexual and gender minorities, where that is possible, including those who usually don't have a voice, so those who are more marginalized. And then they start discussing their security issues, and then they also meet with government stakeholders or with community leaders, so those who are already more in positions of power, to get their buy-in, to get their views, and then to develop specific plans to address some of the issues that they feel are important and that they feel they can realistically address. And it varies very much what these issues are that they prioritize. So a lot of that, those issues are related to domestic violence and sexual and gender-based violence, because that is one of the key security threats in Nepal, particularly for women and girls. But also alcohol abuse that leads to violence and aggression, or drug abuse. But what they also decided, the communities together with the authorities, but mainly really led by the communities, to provide support, for example, to local police, so that they can better reach out to the communities. Yeah, and then they implement some of those activities.
And what kind of impacts have you seen from this programming?
So one of the areas I mentioned already, the support to the police and the cooperation with the police. The communities have advocated with the police to have more police officers established in more remote locations, and to have female police officers based in those offices. Mainly, on the one hand, to have access to police at all, because very often the offices are far away, but also particularly because of the challenges related to sexual and gender-based violence, to make it easier for women to approach the police, because they feel more comfortable talking to a woman police officer. And in many places, that has been successful. So there have been more officers, more female police officers. But the police also feels that they benefit from the approach, because it helps them to perform better. For example, in one place, there was a voluntary weapons collection program, and the police office in one of the locations where we are working together with our partners, they did very well in collecting weapons, and they partly attributed that to the improved relationships between the police and the communities, and feel that they can better communicate with people, better reach out to people, so people approach them and also report issues that they have. On a slightly larger scale, so aside from like implementing the small like action plans on like specific issues, through the empowerment of communities, some community members also feel that they have more responsibility for safety and security in their own area. So rather than only seeing it as the responsibility of the police and the government, they understand that they have responsibilities as well and become more proactive. And we have had a couple of cases where, for example, community, like members of those mechanisms, have been able to address religious tensions and to work jointly with the police to diffuse tensions, to de-escalate the situation. In another case, they intervened in a case of caste-based discrimination, where it was about access to water, and where people from one group didn't want people from another group to get water. And they started to intervene. They called the police, and the police then organized an event where they actually shared more with the community, like what laws exist, what provisions exist that it's not acceptable to prevent people from fetching water and to discriminate people. And another case where it related to sexual and gender-based violence was a case of witchcraft where a couple was accused of, or she was accused of being a witch, and the community wanted to send her to India to a witch doctor. And the community, again, together with the police, raised awareness on the existing laws and then ensured that they were not transferred to a witch doctor, but also to help more traditional mechanisms to understand where there are limitations in their own mandate.
How can we ensure that community security delivers more than just islands of security, but also contributes to broader changes at the national level?
I mean, there are different ways to do that. So on the one hand, on a very like practical level, for example, we work in Nepal, we work a lot in clusters. So we try to work in adjoining administrative units because that is more effective, partly also because it's easier then for the authorities to engage while if they can reach a bigger amount of people, I would say. We are also engaging, while we work at the local level, we reach out to people, authorities at the district level, so district level police, district level administration, to involve them regularly in our activities. And they obviously have decision-making powers over other areas in their districts, but also have linkages to the national level. And we've had a couple of cases where senior district-level authorities that were very, I think, appreciated the work that we have done with our partners, and they also promoted our approach in other areas. So when they were transferred, they tried to use some of the approaches that we've been they've seen us use in the districts where we work. And then we do a lot of advocacy, so then also with district level authorities to share best practices, share lessons learned, and that's quite helpful, particularly where police or ministries have mechanisms in place that somehow link to outreach to communities or work at the community level. So in Nepal, for example, there's a community-based policing approach in place. And so our approach complements that approach, but we can also provide some good practice and recommendations to areas where the community-based policing approach faces challenges. And then, yeah, obviously through reports and publications, what it's also important in some contexts where we work, we can provide direct expertise into draft legislation or draft strategies. So depending on the context, it depends. It's very different how we can link the local to the national.
What tensions have you witnessed between traditional approaches to security sector reform and community security?
I guess I wouldn't say direct tension. I guess there's in many cases, there's a mistrust, particularly when the security institutions, national institutions, are used to a fairly hierarchical, top-down approach, where the security is seen as something that is the state's responsibility and only the state's responsibility. I think to then buy into an approach that is bottom-up, focusing at the community level, giving room to community members, to civil society to engage, and basically in the end giving away a little bit of power or sharing power. I think there's often a resistance, and it takes, I think, convincing or actually showing that this is not threatening, it's actually supporting security institutions or government institutions, because in the end it improves safety and security on the ground, and it should help the security providers to improve their own work and their own performance. So I guess that's what I would see as one of the major obstacles that need to be overcome in context where there is a very, still a very top-down approach to security provision.
Is community security a short-term stopgap as the state builds capacity to provide longer-term security?
I would say no. I think community security is very much about people-centered security and safety. And I think that is something that that is, it's like it's a general approach. It's like a philosophy that should go through security provision in general. So it's not only something that needs to be there in some emergency situations, but it's something that should be part of a general approach to security. And it's a long-term approach, I would say. So I think it's, security is not achieved. There's no endpoint to security. So to follow a community security approach or a people-centered approach to safety and security, that should be part of the general security provision. So it's not, yeah, it's not just a like one intervention. And you have governments and the security providers that are very professional, that can provide, that have capacity to provide security, but it might there might be a very strong top-down approach, which makes it very. So the point is not that their capacity needs to be built to provide security. They might well have that, but it's more about the philosophy to security. So yeah, I think it's not fixing something. It's really about changing attitudes and behavior to security, and making security provision people-centered.
Lastly, what are the challenges and risks when implementing community security programs?
I guess the challenge, one of the biggest challenges that I see is to be realistic in terms of what community security can achieve and in what circumstances and in which context and what it can't achieve. So it's not a like solution that fixes everything and in any context. It is an approach that can increase, improve relationships. It is an approach that can increase resilience. It is not an approach that can solve larger scale violent conflicts. I guess that's some be used in an emergency situation, because I think it needs this longer time perspective. It needs the space for people to come together to discuss, to build relationships. And I think in a situation of acute conflict, that would be very, very difficult. A lot of the other challenges are more about like how you implement the approach. So I guess there is a it is important to ensure that that you avoid having gatekeepers, so people who are basically then taking all the decisions. But it's also part of the approach to be very inclusive. So I guess that risk is very manageable. Another point is, for example, for the local mechanisms we work with to get politicized. And we try, in Nepal specifically, we try to reduce that risk by discouraging people who are in political positions to be part of the group. They can be involved in other ways, but not to be direct members of those groups. What is important is not to undermine the role of legitimate security providers, but to keep them involved, to have them on board, either directly or in an advisory position or by engaging frequently with them. Because what we definitely don't want to create is an impression that, okay, the community now takes over security because the security providers, the official security providers, are not able to do that. So that's not what this approach is about. It's on the contrary, it's about like strengthening security provision by cooperating and by consulting and by being inclusive and improving relationships between communities and government authorities and security providers. Yeah, so I guess those are challenges, but I think we've learned a lot in the 10 years that we've been carrying out community security programs. We have a lot of lessons in terms of how those risks can be mitigated. And I think what we also need to keep in mind are basically the costs of not having a people-centered approach to safety and security. And I think they are much higher than the risks.